we get into it, let's review a little bit and kind of just go over kind of the kind of briefly. And, you know, just remember the things that have happened throughout this journey. How long did this journey take, give or take? It was a long time. Our trips don't take this long. We usually say we're moving. It was round about 4 years, probably in the 3+ 4 year range. So he's been gone a long time, from Jerusalem or, from the area where he had kind of been for a lot of his life. So remember he took off and went through the regions of Phrygia and Galatia, encouraging the brethren. So, you know, going through Lystra, Derbe, Iconium, that area. And the first real stories we get to is in Ephesus. Remember when he got to Ephesus? Who had been there? Remember who had been there, who he kind of followed and had to straighten out a little bit? Apollos had been there. Apollos went on over to Corinth, after, and then Paul arrived there at Ephesus. And remember some of the things that he did there in Ephesus? There's several things. Yeah, Demetrius had caused the riot there. And what letters did we decide he wrote there? Galatians, right? He wrote the brethren and the first letter of the Corinthians, right? From there. And, you know, from there, remember he had stayed there for about, what was it, 3 months or so. And then what happened? There was a split, wasn't there? And where did he have to take the brethren who he had, you remember, he had laid hands and they'd received the Spirit because they hadn't done, that's how he figured out, you know, the teaching that they were still back with John's teachings. So, but with the brethren there, he had to separate. And where did he go with those brethren and stayed there for really, what was it, 2 years? School, yeah, they met in a school of Tyrannus. Where they, for 2 years there in Ephesus. And that's where we, you know, the books, you know, he had time to write. So, and that's where, you know, we went through and Jeff had a good map. Remember his plans, to go to Corinth, and they changed, you know, multiple times. So we saw those. And with those plans changing, what finally happened? He went up to through Troas, right, and then went across over to Macedonia and down to Achaia. What was on Paul's mind when we read his letters? You know, especially the First Corinthians, and we find out in Second Corinthians, he had written that first letter and it was pretty harsh, right? Pretty straightforward rebuke and trying to encourage the brethren there at Corinth. And he was really, you know, concerned about how they'd receive it. So what was he expecting in Troas to find Titus for word about how they received it? He didn't find him there. And, so he didn't delay. He moved on through. One more thing. What was the big thing at Ephesus before we leave it completely? What was the big door of opportunity? We think that's pretty much what it was. Would that happen there? It's pretty huge. And it's honestly, it's probably why he stayed there so long. They burned all of those books, and of the pagan, you know, worship and everything. And, the amount that they had destroyed there was just huge. So there was a lot of converts or interest, you know, and those who had were following the way. So he moves on through. He goes over to Macedonia, works his way down through there. Remember, he'd been to Philippi, been to Thessalonica, Berea, all in that area. And there somewhere in Macedonia. It's not specific. But he does meet up with Titus. He gets word, right, of the how they received that first letter. And from that, he writes the second letter and then follows it brief, you know, pretty shortly going on into Corinth. He doesn't stay long in Corinth this time. It tells us about 3 months. And from Corinth, he goes back, and he takes that pretty much that same route, going back through Macedonia. And he seems to quicken his pace. He's wanting to get on back to Jerusalem for the Pentecost. In Philippi, he's there for the Passover, for the week of unleavened bread. So he's working his way back from, back around. And he gets over to, Miletus as he's coming down through there. And he doesn't take the time to go over to Ephesus again, to be with all the brethren, but he calls the elders over to him at Miletus, and they meet. And what's the main thing that he tells them in that meeting? This is going to be the last time, you know, that I see you. That's what he thinks, based on what his belief is from what the Spirit is telling him. From this point on, he's had afflictions and imprisonments, but it's going to get even and ramped up from what he believes, and this will be the last time. So from Miletus, he skirts on over, and he gets over to, the coast back in, Syria, Judea. He goes from Tyre, meets with the brethren there. It's hard to say they encourage him, but I'm sure he's glad to see them. But there at Tyre, what are they telling him? What did they tell him at the elders at Ephesus? What do they tell him, the brethren there at Tyre, who pray with him on the beach before he leaves again? What is everybody wanting Paul to do? Don't go to Jerusalem. Don't go. And it's very natural, right? I mean, don't go where the difficulty is going to be. But Paul is determined to see this through. And he tells us, you know, he's ready. He's ready. He's ready. If it's the death of him, that's fine. He's okay with that. Yes, thank you. And that's, he's carrying the gift, absolutely. And that's been the main purpose of this whole, journey is to bring back the relief for the brethren. That's right. All right. So he gets to Tyre and he goes to Caesarea. Who do we meet in Caesarea? Philip. Yeah. I kind of like that. You know, here's Philip who we knew early on, you know, was one of the seven chosen in the beginning there of Acts. And he went from that and he went to Samaria preaching. Made converts, you know, taught the Samaritans. And then time later, he's an evangelist. Where is he at? He's in Caesarea and he's preaching. He has a family. And, and then he gets on over to Jerusalem, and there at Jerusalem, what starts happening, pretty quickly, doesn't it? So he goes to Jerusalem, and the brethren there are concerned about how this is going to go, because they know what, you know, what Paul's been saying, what the Spirit's been telling him. So what do they suggest? One thing is there's a few men, right, that have taken a vow, and according to the law. And so the brethren encourage Paul, you know, go through the days of purification with them, pay their expenses for this, join in with them, and let's show the Jews, and, you know, we'll say kind of the, I don't know other words to say it, the hardliners, that you're not opposed to the law. Now, what has Paul been preaching about this whole time? He's gone to the Gentiles, right? And what's the point? What about circumcision? Is it necessary? It's not. But here we are in this situation where Paul is going to say, as an example, he's going to participate in observing the Jewish law, right? Was it okay for them to continue practicing the Jewish law? Yeah, observing the festivals and those things. But what did they need to understand? And Paul's been saying this all along. But in different situations, Paul made different decisions based on where he was at the time. What did he do with, and Jeff pointed this out last time, what did he do with Titus? Yeah, he did not have him circumcised. He did not. What about with Timothy? Yeah. Okay. Different decisions with different, does that mean that, you know, does that make Paul seem, you know, inconsistent or flighty? No. When in, you know, we have this phrase, when in Rome, right? Become, and Paul was that. When he was with this group, what, he was going to do everything possible to teach them, to bring them to Christ. If that meant that this decision is necessary for this group to bring them to Christ, everything that Paul was doing was what? to bring them to the knowledge of Christ. All right? And in this situation, he gets back to Jerusalem. Where is he at? He's at the very seat of the Jewish law, the Jewish traditions, the Jewish leadership. What does he need to do to bring them to Christ? He needs to show them that the Jewish law and their whole life has not been in vain, but that there has been a real importance to that. And we read Paul's feelings on this when we read the letters that he writes. So I won't go into that, but everything he's doing is to bring them to Christ. So let me get forward on these slides. So he's in Jerusalem, and let me get forward here. These are the review slides. So he's there, and he speaks to the Jews. You know, the mob occurs because some of the Jews from where come down? From Asia, where he's been, right? So they come down into Jerusalem, and, you know, Paul is here. What has he already done? He's gone into the temple. He's prayed there. He's been in the temple. He's gone through these 7 days of purification in the temple with these other men, and, you know, and he's going through that. But before those 7 days are even completed, what happens? That's where these Jews from Asia come down. And they're, it's seemingly, it was like Jeff pointed out, that they came here targeting Paul, you know, to thwart his efforts. Seems that way. And so as they stir up a mob, and what is their real accusation to bring against Paul? Exactly. That he brought Trophimus. Now, that was an assumption. They saw Trophimus there. They saw him in the city. But Paul never had brought him into the temple. So, false accusation, you know, number one. So, this mob develops, and they're pummeling Paul. They're already beating on him, and the violence has ensued in this mob that occurred because of them. Well, what happens? Here comes the Romans. All right. So the Roman commander, and he was over 1,000, you know, men. He comes in with soldiers, gets Paul, forcibly gets him out from the middle of that. Binds him up, just like Agabus had prophesied, and gets him up out of that mob, And as they're getting going back to the barracks, Paul asks the commander, hey, can I say something? Well, based on the reading here, I think, Paul speaks in Greek. And so the commander is kind of surprised. He says, you can speak Greek? And, because who does he think he is? An Egyptian. And a terrorist from Egyptian who had led 4,000 men in this other thing. So it seems like that to me. There's probably other ways to look at that. But, so, Paul says, hey, I'm a Jew. I'm from Tarsus of Cilicia. You know, explains it to him. Right? So, so the commander gives him permission to speak. And so here's where, Paul gives and talks to the crowd, in chapter 22, the first part of it. So now, yes, and that's right. He changes and he speaks Hebrew to the Jewish population, the mob there. And, you know, this time as I was thinking about it, reading through it, what does Paul do when he's accused of things through, you know, all these journeys and things when it happens? What does Paul do when he's accused? Exactly what we would do. He would defend and defend himself, right? And he would say, well, this is, you know, this is, and he'd explain it. And I compare that to Jesus and his life. And especially at the end, and I mean, you almost say, you know, through his life, what did Jesus do when he was accused and attacked? Yeah, especially at the end. Think about the purpose. And you know, one of the things we think about is, well, what's my purpose? What am I here for? Jesus knew his purpose. And to carry out that purpose, he had to remain silent. I mean, it needed to go exactly the way it did. So Jesus did not defend himself. And in the end, exactly what the plan was needed to happen. He needed to die for us. And he accomplished that. In Paul's case, what's his purpose? Now, what was his purpose in the beginning of his life? You know, up through what we might say college or young adult, or I don't know how old he was, while he was there with Gamaliel and learning and all this, and what was his purpose? I mean, he was probably going to rise in the ranks there. You know, he's going to be standing in front of the council here in just a little bit, and the Jewish council, the chief priests and everyone. That was probably his path, you know, early on in his life. That was inevitably he was bold, he was zealous for the cause, for the cause of the Jewish people. Well, that changed very dramatically, for a right hand turn on the road to Damascus, and Paul was convinced. He said, "What I've been doing is wrong. You know, Christ is the one." So Paul's purpose from that point on was what? To teach, to go, and he's traveling the whole seemingly the world here, you know, at this time, teaching, right? Teaching the Jewish people, teaching the Gentiles, what they need to do. And so the longer he was able to do that, the more he could get done. So, and he would defend himself when he needed to, and he would use, you know, his birthright, as a Roman citizen. So we'll get to that here in just a second. So, he speaks to the people, and, Jeff went over this part, what he goes through with them. So he tells them the story of Damascus and gets down to, pretty much, the kind of the end of that. He tells them in verse 17, I was in Jerusalem, I was praying in the temple, and I fell into a trance, And he says that Jesus says, the Lord said to him, make haste and get out of Jerusalem quickly because they will not accept your testimony. So this was a long time ago now. This is three journeys back before. I don't know the exact time frame, maybe in the 10 years or something. Kind of a guess. Back before, when he was converted in Damascus, came down to Jerusalem, he was there just briefly because the Lord says, they're not going to accept you here. So you've got it. So he sends him on away very quickly. And Paul says, they know that in one sense, I've imprisoned, I've beaten them, all those who've believed in you. And the blood of Stephen, that's on my hands as well. And all of this, Paul says, and as he's telling this to this group, and remember he's bound at this point because the commander's leading him away to the barracks. He's on the steps and he's telling these people this whole story of his, what has happened with him. And he gets to that point. Have they objected to anything he said to this point? They're listening. And they're quiet. But then his next statement sends them into pandemonium. They were okay, seemingly, they were okay with everything that he said. Even the fact that he had converted to the truth, on the road to Damascus. And everything, even today, there's different levels of people coming closer to the truth. The Jews here in this mob, how close were they? They were not willing to give up one bit of their Jewish heritage, tradition, laws to bring in the Gentiles. That was their line in the sand. They weren't willing to accept that. And when he brings in the Gentiles into the discussion, they go berserk and, you know, away with him, kill him. They were not willing at all to give on that point. Other Jews who, in coming closer to the truth, where did they get stuck? When we read in Acts 15 where the brethren, the apostles and the elders came together. What was the point? What were those Jews, what were they stuck at? Yes, exactly. So they were stuck at the point where the Gentiles could come in, could be in this way and followers of Christ, disciples of Christ. But what did they have to do? They had to be circumcised. They had to, I don't know if it would really go as far as saying they become a Jewish proselyte, but, you know, they had to become a Jew in a sense in order for them all to be together and followers of Christ. Well, we're all trying to get as close to that truth as we can. For different ones with different mindsets and perspectives and not a completely open heart, some will barely get started. It's kind of like the parable of the sower, right? In a sense, but some Jews just won't get to first base. Others will get part of the way and get mired with what's in their heart and not being completely open to allow Christ in completely. We've got to be aware of that for ourselves. To have a completely open heart, to let Christ in, to accept that it's His way and not our way. And it's, you know, all their tradition, all their heritage of the Jewish people here, some just could not get past that. So, yeah. And I think we'll kind of touch on that and extend it into what's about to happen. I'll go ahead and, because he gets into the commander. All right. So he gives this, you know, his defense there, and they just go crazy. Well, the commander has to get him out of there. So he goes and tucks him away in the barracks, and the commander's got to find out what is going on. Commander doesn't have a clue yet about anything about what's happening. He's got to figure it out. Well, what's the Roman's way of figuring out something? You beat it out of him. All right, we got to get the truth. So they lay him out, flay him out, and ready to scourge him. And Paul utters the magic words, Roman citizen, right? He said, is it lawful, you know, to scourge or flog or, you know, an uncondemned person? And the centurion standing there who's got him out there, you know, he gets scared. He goes straight to the commander, tells him, commander comes down, he says, tell me, are you a Roman citizen? He says, yes, I'm a Jew from Tarsus of Cilicia. And the commander said, almost in a way to, bring down, I don't know if that came from, diminish, yes, that's the word. His citizenship, well, commander says, well, I paid for mine too, you know, a great sum. And Paul says, I was born into it, right? So at that point, it actually says that everybody else, you know, those around him, the other soldiers kind of, you know, they're even more afraid. Cause they've bound him, you know, and they can't do that with a Roman citizen according to their law without, you know, some just cause and so forth. Well, so they cease and desist that right there. So the next day, you know, the commander's got to still be, he has no answers. Now he's got a Roman citizen that they've bound, you know, so the commander's got to figure this out. So he decides the next day, call the council together, the Jewish, the chief priests, bring them together, bring Paul. All right. Get rid of the mob. In other words, just the leaders and Paul, let's figure this thing out. So he does. Paul goes down there and, he's before the council. He's before the leaders, the chief priests. Now you got to think about this situation. Paul knows. I don't know if he knows, but he knows them in a sense because he's able to recognize, all right, here's a division between them, all right? And he's going to use that here just a second. So he knows them. They know him. In fact, probably, I can't say the last time that he dealt with them, but what was one of the things that he requested from kind of this body? It was the letters, right? To go to Damascus that he could go up there and do what? Grab the Christians, go from house to house, bring them back to Jerusalem for, you know, persecution, trial, whatever. So that was, I don't know, if that, seems like that was the last time that he had any dealings with this kind of group or these leaders. So here he is now. What has happened to him? He was doing their bidding. He was their, I don't know, star pupil in a sense, going about doing their business, fighting against the way, the Christ. And now here he is, what? He's one of them. He is their enemy now sitting in front of them. So Paul says, he's given the chance to speak first, it looks like. And chapter 23, looking intently at the council, Paul said, brothers, I have lived my life before God in all good conscience up to this day. And the high priest, Ananias, has a soldier strike him, punch him in the face. And Paul says, God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. Are you sitting to judge me according to the law? And yet, contrary to the law, you order me to be struck. So here Paul rebukes the high priest. He didn't know it was the high priest. But in a sense, he prophesied, whether it's from the spirit, but Ananias is gone in a year's time frame, and he's assassinated. But when Paul finds out, he said, "I did not know," verse 5, that he was the high priest. And he quotes, you know, from the law, Exodus 22, "You shouldn't speak evil of the rulers." So Paul realizes he's not going to get a chance here to, and everybody's against him. And I have no idea of, and the scriptures don't tell us, but it's almost the sense that Paul needs somebody in this group on his side. So what does he do? He kind of tosses a hand grenade into the middle of them, right? Because Paul recognizes some are Pharisees, some are Sadducees. He thinks he can get some of them closer on his side with the Pharisees. So he mentions the resurrection, and in these elevated, educated leaders, they go berserk. And it even turns into violence among them. And they can't, you know, so the commander's sitting here again, you know, he can't figure anything out. All right. So he pulls him out of there, out of the middle of them, before Paul gets torn apart, and he takes him back to the barracks. Well, after all this, Paul's in the barracks, and a man comes to him. Turns out Paul has family in town. It's kind of interesting to think about. Paul's sister, or I don't know if she's in town, but Paul's nephew is there, and he's involved somehow or another in all of this, in the sense that he overhears a plot of the Jews. And so he hears their plan. There's 40 of them. 40 of these Jews. Now at that, some of the Pharisees were in this council. The Pharisees were kind of arguing for Paul now. Well, maybe a spirit has told him, or an angel did speak to him. So they were almost defending him now. So there's some that are possibly coming over his, but there's others that are just even further away, you know, and polarized, the issue. So 40 of them, are ready to kill him. And they put themselves under this bond or vow or curse. They're not going to eat, sleep, do anything until they've killed Paul. And so they're dedicated. They're committed to this. It's their lives or his. And, so Paul's nephew hears of it. So he goes and, he's able to go to Paul, in the barracks there. And by the way, when the commander brought him, as soon as the commander found out, he unbinds Paul. Right? He's still in their custody to protect him, I'm sure, but he's no longer a prisoner, you might say, but he's in custody. So Paul's in the barracks. His nephew comes to him, says, "Hey, this is what's going on." Paul says, "Don't tell anybody else. Go tell the commander." So he goes and tells the commander. The plot is that the men have convinced the Jewish leaders to tell the commander, "Hey, we want to try this again. Bring him back. You know, we'll work on this. We'll ask, you know, last questions and dig deeper into it. But on the way, there's going to be an ambush and the 40 men are going to kill him." So Paul's nephew explains this to the commander. The commander says, don't tell anybody. And so the commander now, whatever his reasons are, he can't keep Paul in town. It's just there's too many, against him. It's too dangerous or whatever it is. He's going to send him to Felix over in Caesarea. So because of the plot, the commander gets up this huge, small army, really. 200 soldiers, 70 cavalry, 200 spearmen, 470 total. That's a lot to guard Paul. He was not about to let this get out of control. So he gets him out of there at night, third hour of the night, overnight travel. The soldiers, they all get him out to Antipatris, on the way. Got a map of it. You can see the map. So out of Jerusalem, and I just drew the lines. I don't know exactly the roads, but they get him up through Antipatris. And at that point, all the foot soldiers just going back to Jerusalem, back to their barracks, and the cavalry or the horsemen, they go on with Paul. Paul's on a horse. You got to wonder if Paul was knew how to ride before this, but he's going, and going to Caesarea, for safekeeping, really, and for judgment. Claudius Lysias, the commander's name, he sends a letter, and, he explains it to Felix, of what's happening there. And you find that in, chapter 23, verse 27, verse 26 and following. He gives him a letter, sends a letter along with him explaining what has happened. And he says, I don't find anything worthy of imprisonment or death. But there was a plot to kill him, so I thought to send him to you at once, for you to judge. So Felix gets Paul. He gets the letter. On reading the letter, Felix asks the question, it's like, cause this is dumped in Felix's lap now, this problem in a sense. And, you know, the commander's idea was to bring the accusers over to Caesarea, get them away from the mob and the whole seed of the Jewish people off to Caesarea, get the accusers there, Paul there, Felix there, make a judgment, you know, about this. And, So Felix asked the question, is this really my, I'm assuming he asked the question, is this really my problem? Is he from my province? Is this something I've got to deal with? Paul says he's from Cilicia. Doesn't change anything. Felix goes ahead and hears him out here, but I just kind of get the feeling Felix has got that in reserve to boot this, you know, to somebody else. So we're now in Caesarea. Paul's in Caesarea. He's not necessarily bound anymore, you know, because he's a Roman citizen, but he's in the Roman custody. And now Felix is going to hear the accusers come down, some from Judea, from Jerusalem. And, we'll pick up with continue the story on Wednesday with Jeff.